Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, the sporting world was dealt a double blow with both Roger Federer and Serena Williams hanging up their rackets in the same month. But how do elite sports people who played at the highest level navigate the move away from the spotlight upon retiring? Well, a man who has experience in advising athletes with this transition and other problems that they might encounter in their careers in sports, psychologist Enda McNulty. Enda, you're very welcome to the programme. Enda, listen, first of all, tell me, how did you get into all this? Like helping athletes and performers prepare for life after sport. That's exactly what you do, isn't it?
20 years ago, Armagh won the All Ireland. So as a footballer myself, I had the experience. I had the experience what was a part of an amazing team, what it was like to be part of a team that was, you know, really defining in that sport. And then what is it like after sport? What do you do next? So about a week after Armagh won the All-Ireland, an old mentor of mine sat me down and said, "Enda, what are you going to do when the ball is over?" Now, we were still rocking. I was still at the top of my game, but he was getting me to think about after sport. I had studied psychology. I know you studied a little bit of philosophy back in the day. I studied psychology with philosophy. And of course, then I started to do a career as a coach. I was working as a full-time coach here in Dublin, and I was spending all day every day coaching. But in the middle of that coaching career, I started to have the vision of working with elite athletes all over the world and the biggest companies all over the world. And I had a lucky break. And the lucky break was working with Leinster Rugby. Met a few young, highly aspiring athletes like Luke Fitzgerald, Gordon Darcy. And in that pursuit, I guess, you learn a lot from them. And some of them come towards the end of the career and they ask you for advice and guidance.
Yeah.
And in that time, they're almost asking you for what the hell am I going to do?
Yeah.
Some of them struggle. Some of them suffer. Some of them have no clue whatsoever how to do. So you have to nurture them, coach them, mentor them, and advise them through that process.
Yeah, it's not exactly 65, is it? It's not that retiring age. I mean, they're really only starting so much, you know, the second part. So, like, you kept in the game that you were involved in. So do most athletes, do you think, continue to be involved in the sport that they love in one way or another?
Most of them, I'd say no, they don't get involved, you know, from a professional point of view. No, they think about advancing, they think about developing, they think about all other aspects of life. So the vast majority of them don't and can't remain in their sport because there isn't position for them all to remain in the sport. So I'd say 80% of them don't remain in the sport. However, some of them manage that navigation very strongly. The transition is strongly managed. Some of them have a shockingly bad transition and some of them do just about okay.
Yeah, but hold on, you were 25 years of age, right? And like it's 6 months after Armagh wins or whatever. Like, is that when you said, okay, I'm going to think of this and still play or and still do or and still whatever?
I still did play, but I was coaching alongside that and I was developing my entrepreneurial skills, developing my life skills, because I think life skills are fundamental alongside your sport. And we should be reminding the young listeners at home to not only become, hopefully, sports stars and unlock their potential, but to develop their life skills and their character skills. So it's all going to be over 33, 34 years of age. If you're unbelievably lucky to play at 30 or 39, you're going to be one of a million, literally. But how can you develop yourself alongside your football or your sports career?
What do you mean how? Surely it's when. Shouldn't you be doing it pretty early is the point?
You should be doing it 16 years of age.
That's
so
kind of what I mean. Yeah. By the way, just in terms of football, if you're a goalie, you're laughing because you last past 40. Most of them do.
Well, if you're Pat Jennings and Co, you last past 40. But what about the rock stars that don't develop themselves and think about what happens after this is all over?
We had the guy on the programme, was it called Exit Stage Left or something, the name of his book, something along those lines about that, just about, you know, what did they do and where did they go? And he interviewed about 40 of them. Some of the stories were pretty sad stories, all right.
What about the person working on the HSE who retires at 55 years of age? So everybody's going to have to think about transition.
Yeah.
And I think because the way the world is going, we all need to think about reinventing ourselves about every 2 years. So the best people in life are developing those life skills, those career skills that are adaptable. You can almost be agile and pivot your career in whatever aspect.
Okay, but mentally, it's difficult, isn't it? It really is difficult because you're losing who you are.
It's incredibly difficult, and I still struggle, to be honest, even though it's 10 years after I'm finished playing. So it is difficult, but we can give them coping skills. We can give them management skills from a mental point of view to deal with it.
All right, so there is a process that works to help athletes prepare for retirement, and at what point then do you start discussing it with your clients? Do you talk to people who are 22 and 23 and say, guys, in 7 years' time, you're gone?
So in the Premier League recently, sitting in a classroom with children who are 9 years of age being taught mathematics and being taught leadership at 9 years of age in the Premier League academies. So that is now thankfully being taught very early. However, that is not the norm, as you know. In Ireland here, we're a little bit behind the curve. However, in places like Leinster Rugby in the academy, they are teaching those life skills as part of those programmes back in the day, alongside career skills, of course, alongside the rugby skills.
Right, but you mentioned music earlier on, so I'm going to mention it now. It's in the papers, like about seven or eight different people involved in big bands doing touring at the moment have all stopped, all because of like this business of touring and maybe going to a recording studio and then touring is taking a terrible toll. So that whole mental health thing, tell me more about the strategies around protecting their mental health around the prospect of retirement.
Well, for those touring around the world, like a lot of the CEOs we work with who tour around the world, we talk about energy management. So anybody who's going to burn out if they're touring, we should be smart and strategic at listening in energy management and well-being strategies. Like the young athletes, they have to build it in during the career, but after the career. So energy management, what does that mean? Recovery is a silver bullet. If we recover well enough, it has a dramatic impact on our mental and emotional health. That's one simple strategy. Another simple strategy is your family and your friends. The stronger your family and your friends are, the research is very clear on this, the stronger your resilience is. So for example, one of the girls we collaborate with, she has taught resilience at the US military. And in their programs, one of the best resilience programs in the world, in their programs they talk about the closer you are to your family and friends, the higher your resilience factor is going to be. So the same with a band, same with rock, even rock stars, the closer they are to their family and their friends, the closer they're going to having strong resilience.
Okay, but have you met people, like have you dealt with people, have you tried to kind of coach people, if you like, in their 30s now, whose 20s were really, really, really successful? And do they say things like, you know, what am I outside of sport? How do I introduce myself to somebody? In other words, I suppose, I mean, like, is it a question of grieving the loss?
Of course, I've worked with many. I've done thousands of hours of coaching people like that many, many times. Some of them do grieve the loss. So from an ego point of view, let's be honest, it's a huge difficulty to get over the fact that you're no longer a star playing in front of 85,000 people. Like the rock stars you mentioned earlier, Dave, of course it's like grieving. But let's teach them and coach and advise them how to handle that. So for example, what is their purpose in life? Is it just to be a sports star? Or as you mentioned, a rock star? Or is there a bigger meaning and purpose behind what they're trying to do in life? If it's only about being a star, I would say that's going to have a dramatic impact.
Yeah, sure, but by the same token, you know, sometimes these things go hand in hand if you're that good. Let's take Brian O'Driscoll then. We're talking both here because, you know, you do have examples, I presume, of players who have handled the transition well. You have worked with Brian O'Driscoll. How would you say that he found the change from coming off the pitch?
Well, he spoke recently in that documentary, BT Sport. It's obviously pretty current. He managed it incredibly well overall, although he found it very difficult in the early days, like everybody did. Like I did, like all the stars found it difficult in the early stages, but that's okay. To find it difficult is okay. To have coping mechanisms and have a support structure around you is the more difficult and challenging thing. Brian, thankfully, had started that transition long before his career was over. He'd built a very good brand. He had a loving family. He had a very strong network of friends. He speaks about all this very publicly. And most importantly, he had the mindset that he wanted to think about what was going to happen after rugby, long before rugby was over. He had, in other words, started the preparation before the ball was over.
You know, I was reading somebody there some time back, I think she was an ice skater or something, and says, like, you know, she was just the biggest thing and she was trending on social media all the time. Very suddenly, when the Olympics were over, she wasn't. She said she just couldn't deal with it, like the no attention at all.
Well, I think social media is a big factor because people's ego has been fed by the social media. The more followers you have on Insta or on Twitter, the more, you know, you can get that massage of your ego.
Again, if you give into that, you're a fool.
Well, I know it's a bit of crack and banter, but there's a serious side to that. It's having a huge impact on mental health for people that if they're only chasing after followership instead of meaning and purpose. Now, that doesn't sound as sexy and coolest thing in the world, but it's imperative to their well-being.
Okay, so what about finding consistency and kind of physical fitness? I mean, do you have to keep that bit up as well, considering how much you gave it before?
Yeah, I think the week after I finished playing with Armagh, I made a decision I was going to train for every week of my life. I haven't stopped training since I left with Armagh. I think it's imperative to your physical health, your emotional health. I also think it's imperative to your mental health, of course. So yes, I would strongly encourage anybody stopping any sporting endeavour to keep moving, to keep exercising, because it's absolutely imperative to your well-being.
Yeah, now also you mentioned Brian O'Driscoll. That one worked. That's because people like you are around now and can help make it work, if you like. Around George Best's time, I mean, I think he was 26 when he actually left Manchester United, which is quite bizarre. I went off to other things, but I mean, like, he didn't do too well, did he?
Was he the biggest rock star of all time?
There's no question about it. I could go back to certain details of the fact that for the first time ever in 1966 or 67 or whatever, just before they won in 68, the famous Wembley final against Benfica, but he was on the front page of the newspapers wearing a sombrero coming back from Spain from a match. There had never been a footballer on the front page of a newspaper until that time. He changed the game completely.
He was a game changer. Yeah. We're talking about game changers earlier on.
In terms of everything, not just football, fashion, everything else, because the Beatles had been 4 or 5 years earlier. He did the exact same thing in football.
He changed the game. And I think, unfortunately, because he was the first real rock star sport, there was no structure in place. There was no psychologist in place. Although, interestingly, Pelé, when he went to his first World Cup, there was a psychologist involved with Brazil who, interestingly, told the coach, don't play Pelé. He's not psychologically advanced enough. He was 17 years of age, and of course, the psychologist was wrong. The coach was right. So in those days with George Best, there was no support structure. There was no career coach. There was no mentor, no communication coach, no financial coach. Yeah. And they didn't know about the importance of that family structure. Of course, George went through very volatile relationships. So he was almost the opposite of what we would advise strongly in terms of managing somebody's career after sport or after, let's say, their work in the HSE or in a company or maybe even in performance arts.
Okay, by the way, 51552 is our text. We're talking to Enda McNulty, as in sports psychologist, and we're like Roger Federer and Serena in this same month. And that I saw Roger Federer being interviewed the other day, and he did make sure that it was said that, no, I'm going to stay within the game to do something. He's going to stay within tennis.
Well, what a graceful man. What a gentleman.
I mean, he really is the number one for every reason, isn't he?
Everybody
loves
example.
Him too.
What an example of how great. I think they said about Mandela, Mandela was a great example of how great a human being should be. I think Federer is the example of how great an athlete should be on and off the court. He's a brilliant example. Serena Williams, similarly. I think what Serena Williams has done with her brand and her investment portfolio has been amazing.
Okay, but by the same token, like, we do need a Kyrgios now and again too, for God's sake. You know, the game needs, you know, it's useless without it, frankly. It's just that he isn't it. Yeah. Okay, so when you don't have that competitive element anymore, that's another thing that really is lost as well, isn't it, in terms of, do I really have to get up? Like, there's the alarm clock going off.
I struggle with that. I'll be honest, I struggle with that every single day. However, I think if we flip that around and be competitive with ourselves, could we be better today than we were yesterday? Could we be a better father today than we were last week? Can we be better at how we communicate today than we were last week? So I'm still a big believer in being competitive, even though I'm not competing in front of 85,000 people. So I love that competitive spirit, but I think we also have to weary of that other side of that, which is just being. This is very philosophical, and back to your philosophy degree probably, Dave. But I'm talking about just being versus always chasing and striving. And I'll be honest, I still struggle with that.
Okay, but what about people like, I'll give an example if you're into the football, like Dele Alli for Spurs, one of the greats for a long time. He has gone through a patch that is going on a bit too long of not happening. In other words, within the game, aside from retirement, there can be many major incidents in a sports person's career that could really knock them off that game. Injuries, missing the championship goal, playing a bad game, or two or three or four or five or six. How can you help them cope with these major moments? Or you do that as well, obviously.
I had a phone call in the last week from an agent in the Premier League about that particular player. So
oh, really?
I can relate to that, okay? Wow. So what I would say is, how do you help them cope? Well, if they're really struggling with their form, we can build their confidence. If they're really struggling and they're in a rut, a performance slump, let's say, then we can find a way to get them out of that. That's a mental training program. So we build mental training programs for those still involved with sport and, of course, life after sport. And in that mental training program, you build their confidence muscle. You figure a way to get them back into that flow or zone of optimal functioning. And with the same amount of physical training and mental training over a 6 to 8 week period, you can conclusively improve their confidence and get them back into that flow.
Okay, so that's what you do now with Mo Salah if you can sit him down, because he hasn't necessarily had a great 6 months. But I mean, imagine he scored 2 goals. He doesn't need you then. He's off again, is he?
Yeah, well, I think the best athletes and performers actually are proactive with that. They work with a performance coach, and we're now performance coaching every day, well ahead of the performance slump. Not just when they get into the hole, they work way ahead of that.
Okay, can we go back about 12 years and stay with rugby then, or go back to rugby and say the other one, if it's like Sexton, okay? There's many career-defining moments that athletes and sports stars will encounter that are career-defining in a very good way. And 10 years ago, or whatever it was, about 9 years ago, I'm talking here, Mr. Sexton. Am I right?
Yes, I think Sexton, in that famous Northampton final, that half-time speech that he made to the team about, you know, basically stepping up to the plate, grab hold of this opportunity because they'd regret it for the rest of their lives. And it was the composure, the sense of calm in his voice, but also the technical and tactical detail. So that, for me, was a career-defining moment for Sexton. And more importantly, how he performed in the second half. So he didn't only say it at half-time, and that's become very famous, of course, but it's how he performed and backed it up, and the second half, with his carries, with his passes, with his, obviously, that amazingly famous try, that touchdown was just incredible. So that's a career defining moment that went very well. There's also bad examples of career defining moments. I get sent off in Crow Park in front of 85,000 people. People still nudge me every time when I go home to Armagh, or sometimes in Dublin, to say, and what the hell was going on? Why the hell did you get sent off? What, were you sabotaged by your emotions, or what the hell happened?
Katie Taylor, well, you know, where does she come into it? Because I mean, the psychological battles that she seems to go through all the time. It works, by the way.
Yeah, she's incredible. So I think London was obviously career defining. I would say it's a life defining moment for Katie Taylor in London, winning that gold medal. And I think she basically transformed women's sport. In one Olympic game, she transformed women's sport in Ireland. I would say she became the epitome of what it means to write your own legacy. She did it real time at that London Olympics. It was just phenomenal.
And what happens, like, in terms of the whole thing? Is it age sometimes? Is it injury? Is it exhaustion? Do you have to go through all of those things and say, okay, this is what your problem is, let's start there?
So what happens afterwards, or do you mean, yeah, what happens afterwards? I think it's a combination of all. It's a lack of almost, what do? What's your purpose? It's a lack of social support, because there's incredible camaraderie in those, let's say, change rooms and environments. It's also the financial. You're paid maybe in the Premier League, some of the players are getting paid $5 million a week, one of the players I dealt with recently, and then there's no salary. What the hell are you going to do next? There's also the lack of guidance, because in all those high performance sports environments, there's great guides and great coaches and great mentors, but when you step out of that, that coach or mentor like Sir Alex Ferguson isn't there anymore. So that has a dramatic impact on them. In other words, who's giving you that guidance, that navigation that you need?
But also, you know, exercise is people's stress release as well. If they're doing 10 hours a day or whatever it happens to be, and when that goes, when they don't have to get up anymore, that's pretty uncool as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but a lot of them have built that self-discipline. I deal with one young rugby player at the moment. He's an elite rugby player, and his self-discipline is so strong that even after rugby, he'll keep exercising, because he's built it into his lifestyle. He's built it into, I guess, his DNA. We'd encourage everybody, all the listeners, to build in some exercise on an ongoing basis.
Okay, so how can you help them cope then with the major moments? Like, you help athletes and performers prepare. What is it? Like, technical training is the big thing, is it?
It's like before you go on air, rehearsal. So get them to rehearse.
That'll be a first.
So rehearsal, get them to rehearse before they go into the arena, and rehearse multiple times. Have their little mental strategies, for example, how they breathe in those moments is going to prepare them. Have visualized it so many times that it becomes almost like second nature. Make sure that they're able to calm down their minds and their emotions in the middle of the moment. So we talk about that concept of centering. So they're able to center in the middle of the moment. And finally, make sure that if something does go wrong, they've got their reset mechanism.
Okay, what's scenario planning as such?
Scenario planning is, in other words, you're playing, let's say in a Premier League match, you're 3-0 down, it's half time. What is our scenario at that stage? How are we going to deal with it technically, tactically, mentally and emotionally? And if you've scenario planned it so well that when it happens, the players go, oh, as we've practiced it in those scenarios, we just put into practice that game plan, that mental game plan.
Just a matter of interest, just going back to Katie Taylor, I mean, tough enough times in her private life, and yet when she does the whole thing, the sports thing, a very positive impact on sports.
I think her religion's a very big part of her staying resilient. I think also her family around her has been very strong, and she's obviously a strong support team inside and outside the ring. So she's dealt with adversity. We're all going to deal with adversity. It's how we handle the adversity is imperative.
Well, then, are there strategies that, like, I mean, you use these huge strategies for sport with all these kind of headlines like mental training and scenario planning and everything else. But can you use them? Can you transfer them to other industries? Or have you been asked to do so?
So 50% of what we do now is in
industry. Oh, right.
So 50% is industry. It's working with a young lady who's leading a global sales team. It's working with a young surgeon. Yeah, so for us, it's 50% of what we do, at least, is working with people. For example, working with people in non-for-profit, working with a CEO in a charity at the moment who has a dramatic impact around the world, helping her stay resilient so she can help her charity stay resilient so they can impact young girls in Ethiopia stay resilient in the middle of that amazing adversity. So these skills are applicable to all aspects of life. That's the exciting thing. Now, your listeners will be wondering, but is there any research behind this? Way back 50 years ago, psychologists were teaching people in sport, and then thankfully they were bringing that into schools in terms of teaching young kids growth mindset in schools. And then thankfully now, of course, it's happened in universities and in organisations around the world. So of course you can apply it in all aspects of life. That's the exciting thing. And that's not the last 50 years. I would say, go back to the last thousands of years. Meditation has been around for thousands of years. Yeah. So it's helped people in all aspects of life, not just the archer, not just the person who's doing calligraphy, but also the person who's doing life, everyday life skills.
Okay, so you have no worries then about Serena or Roger, I presume, for their futures.
They've got the financial well-being as well. Yeah. So if you've got multi-millions
in the
bank,
helps.
It kind of helps. You've got multi-millions in the bank, you know.
Yeah, right. Okay, as the man said, I've been rich, I've been poor. Rich is better. All right, listen, thanks a million, Enda. Enda McNulty, it is, sports psychologist. There's a lot there. Thanks, Enda.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.